This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the morning run continues. Julian Ng, Tan Chung Han and myself, Sharad Kutin, with the top business stories of the day. We start with looking at inflation numbers. Are you feeling it at the mama? Are you feeling it on the streets? Is the price of your coffee now much more than it was last week or last year this time?
I don't know whether it's going to have some knock-on effects into the mamak stalls, but certainly fuel and transportation were the main culprits of that 5% inflation, which we have not seen in many years, because your raw 95 and 97 have gone up over 20% in the past year. But alarmingly, the F&B sector also went up by 4%.
You know, it's an interesting series of questions and news items we have today, all about prices. Some prices never seem to come down. They only ever go up, including the wages of members of a board of companies. Some things fluctuate, like price of petrol. And then some things are going down, apparently, you know. What is going down? What is stagnant, perhaps? What is stagnant, maybe not going down, is your wages.
Oh, wages. You're talking about wages. You're making a little rant now. But, you know, Han, how much are these two items, the fuel and the F&B, I think they have a huge impact on the CPI.
Yeah, that's right. So these two components alone account for about 40% of CPI. That's your consumer price index. And also, going back to the question that you posed earlier on, Shira, you know, like whether it's the price of coffee that has really gone up, but essentially the CPI measures a basket of goods, right? So it's and RON 95 plays a big part in it. If you recall, March 2016, it was at 1.60 ringgit per liter there, you know, and then last month it was like above about 2.20 or so, right? You know, so I think it'd be interesting also to see what you know, economists are saying about this figure here. You know, keeping in mind 5.1%, this is the highest since 2008.
Yeah, I think they are of the opinion that going forward, at least in the second half of the year, this 5% will not last, and it would taper down a bit simply because that big move in the petrol prices have already been made. But at least one economist, Li Hengjue of the Socioeconomic Research Center, says that you need to take care of supply-side policy solutions in order to break away from this cost-push inflation. Because if there are, simply put, a lot of production bottlenecks, if there are a lot of mispricing in products and raw materials, this will filter through the rest of the pricing for goods and services. So you've got to really let producers do their thing without a lot of impediment.
Well, you know, one of the things, I just thought of another thing, Julian, that's going down potentially, and that's because in this transport, fuel and transport basket, is the price of taxis. Taxis now with Uber and Grab, actually the cost of taking that car is actually gone down for those who traditionally were stuck in the taxi segment.
Yeah, I think that is a result of something that's very good, which is, you know, business ideas and innovation. It's not a business model that's driven by a punitive cost, for example. So Uber and Grab are parts of that digital innovation, which would be very good for the economy, but they are currently still not representative of the entire economy. And I read a report yesterday that the digital economy would comprise about 20% of the economy.
Now, you know, while there might be downward pressure on transport for these ride-sharing services, I wish that downward pressure would be seen in the housing you know, industry as well. But apparently, according to some of this recent news flow or some comments from REDA president, REDA being the Real Estate and Property Developers Association, Dato Sri Abdi Iskandar Muhammad Mansor, you know, that we may actually see a rise in home prices because of construction costs, apparently due to some safeguard duties on the steel industry.
Yeah, this is a form of protection in the steel industry. And because of the implementation of this last week, I think, it has resulted in about a 35 to 40% rise in steel and a 6% rise in cement costs. And not to mention, over the last few years, the entire Malaysian manufacturing sector and industry has experienced rising labor costs. So REDA is saying, I think if you read between the lines, it's even threatening to raise property prices, right? Property prices will have to go up because costs, they have to pass on these costs to house buyers.
Now, that's assuming then that the house buyers or these potential house buyers even have the kind of an ability to afford these elevated house prices, right? Already as it is, you know, the unaffordability of homes in Malaysia has been rampant. You know, we are seeing basically everybody under the sun, you know, every single authority, every single stakeholder already commenting on it, you know, and then these kind of comments from Radar, you know, doesn't really help alleviate the situation. Does
I want to come back to the question of protectionism. So prices of steel have gone up 35-40% to protect steel producers, and this is against the interests of home buyers, essentially.
Obviously, yeah.
And so the question is, why is the government coming down on the side of steel producers rather than on the, you know, people with aspirations for homes?
So this is part of the industrial policy where the government believes that if you kind of want to nurture a new industry, and steel is not new, it's quite decrepit actually, but the idea here is to protect the entire ecosystem of steel manufacturing, including the manufacturers, the workers there, and the suppliers of that industry. The government feels that, as this policy implies, protecting that decrepit industry is more valuable than protecting the property sector, for instance, because you see that the property sector is very profitable. So maybe they have some perhaps excess profits to pass on to the steel sector, right? So this is a kind of a very visible hand of the government allocating resource in a very direct, perhaps erroneous and inefficient way.
Except they might not pass it on back or take out profits for themselves, but might actually just pass it on to the consumer.
Right. Yeah, at the end of the day, somebody has to bear the cost of that.
Now, but at the same time, I think to be fair, you know, real quick, the government has rolled out a few policies to make affordable housing more accessible to to real demand, okay, real prospective house buyers. You know, I don't really have time to go into the details, but you know, if you guys want to, you know, just Google Bandar Raya Apartments, just came out a couple of days ago. Really interesting, pricing scheme there.
Well, speaking about pressure on fees, Malakoff Corp Berhad is in the news because it has agreed to review its non-executive director's remuneration at its next board meeting.
Yeah, I don't know whether this is the source of dissatisfaction is coming from the poor performance of the share price of Malakoff, which has fallen about 25% in last year. In the latest results, profits also fell 21%. Now, Malakoff spends over 4 million ringgit a year, at least in 2016, on 11 directors. That comes up to about 380,000 ringgit a pop.
Annually for each of those directors?
For each director. So the question here is, are there too many directors and is each of those directors costing too much?
How do you apply for this job, by the way?
I think you've got to be somebody.
You've got to be somebody?
You've got to be somebody.
Well, I'm a nobody.
Or try Googling for the application form online or something.
True. But not to Malakoff, maybe some other company.
So is this pressure coming from shareholders?
Shareholders, yeah.
Okay.
Some shareholders have created this so-called resolution in a meeting where shareholders would vote on whether they want to pay the directors more or cut it down. And this has pushed the hand of a group managing director or the chairperson, Tan Sri Said Anwar Jamal Lulal, who says that they will look into this. They will look into this issue of the directors' remuneration.
But when, at the same time, when you compare that to, say, the fundamentals of the energy industry, you know, generally speaking, you know, it is on an upward trend. You know, Malaysia apparently has this insatiable appetite for energy, right? You know, electricity. You know, so when you compare that with the kind of decisions that are being made at the corporate board level, or at least the sentiments, right, towards the directors of this board, that they're earning too much money, you know, it's interesting to see there almost seems to be a contrast there between, you know, what the bullish outlook for the energy industry is and what role Malakoff plays versus, you know, how much they should be paying to their directors.
Well, the sentiment on Malakoff isn't all that bullish, because if you look at their price trajectory since the IPO in 2015, it has not done very much. So this may be a source of restiveness for the shareholders. But the question is the role of the directors, right? They are there to protect and safeguard the interests of the shareholders. So are they needed more in bad times, or should you cut costs in bad times?
Fascinating question. I've never heard the word restive applied to shareholders. I always think of sort of large populations of natives against their colonial masters. But okay, there you have
same
it.
Same idea.
Okay. Same idea, right. Now, also in the news, 16% of students are willing to accept bribes, according to the MACC.
is this a half glass, glass half empty or half full situation?
That sounds good because that means like 84% of students institutions of higher learning are not willing to accept bribes.
Well, let me give you the detail of the breakdown, right? 16% would take bribes, about two-thirds would report corruption, and about 18% would give bribes. And I'm wondering whether those who give bribes would also accept bribes.
Now, another interesting trend when you look closely at the numbers, the percentage of those who are willing to take bribes has actually risen by almost 5 percentage points compared to the same study a couple of years ago. Likewise, those who are willing to report corruption, that figure has actually dropped by about 9 percentage points, you know, over those 2 years. So that appears to be a rather alarming trend. But at the same time, I wonder what that 16% is compared to, say, the overall Malaysian population.
I wonder also if people report accurately. I mean, people are obviously under pressure to say the right thing. But, you know, when they look at the front pages, like, say, The Star this morning, lock up SPRM, maybe that's probably more powerful, right?
Yes.
You just see people are there, actually get booked for doing the wrong thing. And you get this wonderful T-shirt to go along for that. That's the only good thing about being in a lockup, I'm imagining. Anyway, we're coming up to the news shortly. And then, of course, we have the opening numbers in the stock market and more analysis. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.